Hello and welcome to another episode of Election Watch, the podcast brought to you by Politics Unboxed along with Expression FM News. Yes, I know we're spoiling you two podcasts in relatively quick succession about two rather important elections. This one, however, not a look ahead, but a look back on what has been happening over the last couple of months, because unless you have been living under a political rock, you will know that the Conservative Party have a brand new leader, and that leader is Liz Truss. She has won the vote of members in a head-to-head against Rishi Sunak with 57.4% of the vote. So what does this mean for the future of the Conservative and Unionist Party? What can we expect in the short term, and what can we expect of what a Liz Truss government might look like, especially when they're facing what seems to be a resurgent, if a little bit one-themey, opposition in the Labour Party. So that's what's coming up on today's Election Watch. Election Watch. And joining me to discuss these events, we have two panelists who you've seen on Election Watch before, our regular correspondents, Vicky and Laura, and a voice you've heard if you've been a long-time listener to the Politics Unboxed podcast. A friend of the podcast, one of our new political commentators, and, well, I don't know, would you describe yourself as ideologically conservative, but sort of drifting without a political party at the moment, Matthew?
Yeah, that kind of sums up, to be honest.
So there we are. That's our panel of three. It's great to have you all with us. So let's start with the bits that we really can't go any further without saying. Liz Truss, barring any massively unfortunate mishaps in the next 24 hours or so, is going to be the next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. She's going to travel to Balmoral by plane to see the Queen and form a government tomorrow, shortly after Boris Johnson hands in his resignation. And this has obviously come about because of that cabinet coup, you might call it, where Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid started that steady stream of ministerial resignations, which feels like an eternity ago. Well, I'm sure we'll get on to talking about the length of this whole ordeal in a little bit. But Liz Truss saw off the six other members of the Conservative Party who put themselves forward, and then Rishi Sunak in the head-to-head. And she's won. So what happens now? Obviously, we know the formalities. She's going to become Prime Minister. We've heard how she's campaigned. Nicola Sturgeon doesn't like particularly how she's campaigned, and that's one of the people Liz Truss is going to have to work very closely with. So, I don't know, let's go around the panel. We'll start maybe with Vicky and then work our way around. What do you see in the future for Liz Truss, maybe in the next weeks or months?
I mean, I think it's going to be really difficult. She's got to make a few major policy announcements soon to keep on top of cost of living, keep kind of showing what she plans to do about Brexit, Northern Ireland, that whole ongoing saga, and then also any kind of other problems that could arise soon. I mean, there's a whole heap of stuff that could potentially happen. And she's also got to unite the party while doing that, which is going to be difficult because any policy she takes in that regard is inherently going to be a bit divisive because not all Tory MPs are going to agree on that. So difficult, I'd say. I don't think she's going to have a stable, like, getting in period, getting to know the job. It's going to be quite immediately problematic, and we'll just have to see if she can get support behind her policies or it continues to look poor and Conservatives continue to lose support into, like, the conference season.
Anyone else fancy a look into the old political crystal ball, seeing what's just around the corner?
I think it's going to be an election. I don't think she can hold off to 2024. I really don't. I want her to, but I really don't. I think she's going to be forced, and I might be proved wrong, but I think because it's the same old cliche of, you know, she's only been voted in by 80,000 people, and I think Starmer's going to keep going, keep going, and keep going. And if, you know, ultimately she wasn't the she wasn't the MP's choice, you know, Sunak got, what, 100 and something? I can't remember. 100 and something MPs to put them in. And I just think she's going to be fighting back. It's not like Boris, who had, well, you know, it was a foregone conclusion from the minute Theresa May resigned. Boris Johnson was going to win, regardless. And when you're winning 100 votes in the second round of voting, it might be slightly later on that, but that's what Boris got the first, when he won. Fine, he could have kept, well, if it wasn't for the fact that it was on Parliament, he could have kept going. But I see an election. I don't want one, because I think we'll be back to hung Parliament territory, because there is no way, I don't really care, there is no way that the Tories are going to win the next election. I don't really care what anyone says. There is no way that the Tories are going to win. Absolutely no way. And I said this from day one from 2019. I felt as if 2019 was one of these weird elections that you can't really, you know, see, a lot of people lent their vote to the Tories and all that stuff. A lot of these Labour voters will go back to Labour, and I think it will be quite a wipeout of the Tories. Whether it will be a Labour majority, I don't know, but it's going to be quite a wipeout. You know, a lot of your 2019 intake, I think, will go. But I think there probably will be an election. Don't know when, but probably.
Bold predictions, putting the political acumen out there on the line, Matthew, but I like it. I like it. This is certainly setting up to be an interesting time. Turning to the country, and I think, Laura, I'll bring you in on this one. There is a lot going on right now. We have questions around the future of the union, the future of what this post-Brexit settlement looks like. I mean, we know Liz Truss is particularly proud of her work in the Department for International Trade. But then there's also the really pressing issue very close to home around the cost of living crisis. We've heard what Liz Truss has said on the campaign trail. Do you think we're going to have to see something more, something new, or a different side of Liz Truss, perhaps, as she settles into her new home at number 10?
I think, well, just to build on what Matthew was saying, the bookies odds are 33-1 that Liz Truss will resign by the end of next year. And I think the next week is going to be really crucial, because before it came out today that she will be our new prime minister, she said within the next week we will find out her plans to tackle the cost of living crisis, which, as mentioned, touched on by Matthew, the whole idea of a general election, meaning everyone gets to vote, will feel like the more obvious answer, especially seeing as it's such a crucial time, depending on what she will do. And I think we've seen a lot of her policies just are quite broad, trying to touch every aspect, lowering taxes one end, doing whatever to try and get as much support within the Conservative Party itself. It's going to be very interesting to see what she comes up with to include the whole of the United Kingdom, especially seeing as Labour released that the winter, so the average winter cost of bills is going to be £3,500 for the average family household. For 10 Downing Street, it's going to be £2,000. So it's going to be very interesting to see if an issue that won't necessarily impact her, because it's going to be subsided by taxpayers, will be reflected in her policies when it comes to the rest of the country.
It's very interesting. Just on that quick point, I've seen a headline that's popping up on a couple of news sites right now that Liz Truss is considering biting the bullet and announcing some measure of a freeze on energy bills, with an announcement rumoured to be scheduled in potentially for Thursday. So this is great news for us recording this on a Monday. We'll have no idea whether or not this is just political to-ing and fro-ing, the sort of spin doctor-y words that get thrown around, as inevitably they do in modern politics, or whether this is going to actually come through. That, whilst it would probably be seen by many people as a very big step in the right direction, this cost of living crisis is still going to have widespread repercussions. We know there are some people who are struggling to pay their bills even at the current rate, so a freeze doesn't help them at all. And one other thing, this just adds to the energy, the cost and the financial implications of Liz Truss's policies that she's been announcing on the campaign trail. The flagship of them, which is the reversing the national insurance rise and other measures to cut taxes. With the government income going down and the government expenditure going up, I mean, I know I haven't got out of university with my economics degree yet, but I'm sure that doesn't quite add up. So what are we missing? What's Liz Truss got to do to show us where these numbers add up together, or do they not?
It sounds like you're working for the Rishi Sunak leadership bid over there, Reece. That seems to be their main question over the last 6 weeks. I think the answer seems to be that they don't, and it's going to require quite a lot of borrowing. You can't cut taxes and increase government expenditure. It's sure it's possible that she's going to cut government expenditure in some other areas. There's always clamour about like cutting civil service numbers, that kind of thing, to, you know, make more efficient government spending and all of that. But I think the reality is there's only so much efficiency you can introduce into government spending. And if you're going to lower taxes as well as provide fuel bill cost relief, that money has to come from somewhere. And the only place you've really outlined is by borrowing it. And that could have some quite interesting ramifications in the future. But like I said, I'm not an economics student. So, I mean, obviously, you'll have to explain that to me.
What I was saying was, I think cutting national insurance, cancelling the rise in national insurance, what I meant to say, is a good thing, because I just don't think putting taxes up right now is the best idea. I think that it was, you know, we couldn't have helped COVID happened. You needed the money for furlough. And I just think right now is the worst time to put tax up, given we've got a cost of living and everything. It's the worst time. I was listening to Martin Lewis on Good Morning Britain this morning because I couldn't sleep, so woke up at 6 in the morning. And he was saying that a freeze, it's a good idea. Well, not a good idea. It's the better of all the ideas that have been suggested. But the problem is you freeze it like blank for everyone. But like he's saying, he's on a decent wage, so he doesn't need, you know, he can afford the rising bills, so he doesn't need a freeze. But someone on a very low income will need a freeze. So it's like, it's not like he said you can't do a freeze like a tax. You know, you can't do it by tax band. You have to freeze or not freeze. So that's where she needs, you know, if she's going to do it, she needs to work out a way to do it fairly and not adversely do it. And I've seen a couple of people on Twitter say that as well. It's like, you know, these journalists and people in a decent job, they can afford the rising bills, so they don't need a way, they don't need a freeze. But other people, yeah, they need a freeze, but how do you do it so it's you're not hitting the people who don't need it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things. I don't know if anybody watched the Sunday morning programme, a new one on the BBC with Laura Koonsberg, Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, that'd be what they called it. There was another argument put to Liz Truss, not about the cost of living crisis specifically or the energy bills, but in relation to her tax cut plans, in specifically the national insurance reversal, which made a broadly similar point. In that, I think there was a graphic up on the screen behind, and Laura asked the question, is it fair that the people in this lower tax bracket, they will only make a saving of, I think it was between £6 and £8, whereas the ones where you get towards the higher tax bracket, well, they could make a saving of up to £1,000, some maybe even £2,000. And I think this comes at the heart of the ideological divide that is sort of spreading throughout many parts of the country and is sort of being epitomized by this particular leadership battle. I'd say Rishi Sunak has obviously lost this race, but was making a very different argument to the traditional conservative cut tax, fiscal responsibility immediately in terms of low budget deficits, etc. Liz Truss, on the other hand, very small C conservative principled, taxes go down. In as few words as you can, that is conservative economic policy. Taxes go down and the country stays stable. The great ship of state should be piloted on the choppy seas. Now, I forget which conservative theorist wrote that. It's been a while since I studied conservative political theory. But this is an interesting divide that is being created now, because what does Liz Truss do? Does she U-turn on her campaign policies of, well, no, tax cuts go down for everyone because, as she says, it is quite fair that the wealthiest who pay the most tax get to save the most tax when a tax cut happens? Or does she then turn that around from her campaign and say, actually, no, hang on, I'm going to introduce something graduated? Which one comes off with more credibility and which one might be better for the country? I know it's a very much an opinionated and ideological question, but I think it's really something Liz Truss is going to have to grapple with. What do you guys think?
I don't think she can change her tax plans now. She's kind of taken the political heat from it on national broadcasters anyway about lowering taxes and committed to it. It may not be something she announces straight away, but I think it's something she's going to have to do before she calls another election, whatever that is. I think, like, if she does U-turn, the U-turn will be on, like, the fuel energy prices, because I know she started the leadership campaign saying there'd be no handouts. And I think she's going to realise quite quickly that she's also got to do something there, because if she's going to kind of even keep people, conservative people, members happy, let alone the rest of the country, she's got to address energy bills, and that's where the U-turn is going to happen.
So, yeah, that's one of the key arguments that's going to have to be fought over in the immediate aftermath of this election. One thing I want to just briefly turn on to is the state of the Conservative Party right now, and then we'll move on to perhaps some of the longer term, the structure of Liz Truss's government, looking at potential cabinet appointees, because that's a conversation all in its own right. And I know we've got some panelists waiting to talk about those potential appointees. But something that struck me, well, two things really. First of all, we now know how many members of the Conservative Party there are, or there were at the start of the contest, 172,437. Now, that's an increase of about 13,000 from 2019, which was the last time membership was revealed. But not all of them even voted. So only 141, nearly 142,000 Tory members voted in the contest. 82% turnout, which is a darn sight better than general elections right now, but still, when it's such a small electorate, it really does make a difference. But of that, Liz Truss only gets 57.4% of the vote, which is the lowest that any victorious candidate in this system has ever received. So that's lower than David Cameron in 2005, Boris Johnson in 2019, Ian Duncan Smith, who didn't even last 2 years in the Conservative Party leader's office as leader of the opposition before he was removed by the party and replaced with Michael Howard. Even he got 60% of the vote. And crucially, 57% of 82% of members, that's not a majority of members for Liz Truss. She falls short of an outright majority of paying Tory members. So my first question really is, how does Liz Truss as a leader take these actions that she wants to take when she looks like, from those figures that I've just read out, she looks like she has a particularly divided membership. And I'll just throw in as a little extra bit of spice, those polls that came out just before the vote was announced, where 44% of Tory members said they wanted Boris Johnson on the ballot paper and staying in number 10 rather than either of the two candidates. So this is a membership not only split down Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss lines, but also people who would have voted for Boris Johnson had he been there. I'm sure there are supporters of Penny Morden, Kemi Badenoch, Tom Tugendhat. So I wonder, how does Liz Truss unite what can be a very feisty electoral base? We know what the Conservative Party can do to its leaders, after all.
I mean, I think in some way it's in her hands. If she appoints any kind of opposing figures to her cabinet, which it sounds unlikely, but if she does, that might help kind of make it look like she's reaching out to other members of the party. If she considers other things, policy ideas, and just kind of like serves well as prime minister, gives confident PMQs performances, that might help steady the ship. But I think in some ways it's a bit out of her hands what Boris Johnson decides to do in the future, how obviously a presence he is on the back benches could unsteady the ship if he's, it looks like he's still kind of making aims at leadership. Whether MPs, as they've been suggesting there may be, they might do in the papers, start sending in letters of no confidence in her quite quickly, that's not going to help either. And I think lots of the stories about that are probably just quite hyperbolic. I think it's unlikely we're going to start seeing no confidence letters tomorrow. It makes the party look quite unserious considering the state of the country at the moment. But if MPs decide to start making those moves, if they don't want to get behind her as prime minister straight away, that proves, means it's going to be quite difficult to ever get the party under control, and things like an early election or another vote of no confidence become more likely.
So yeah, that's one of the angles that we're going for. I don't know, does anyone else have anything they want to jump in on about this Conservative membership?
Can I come in on that, right?
Absolutely.
So I think, going back to what you were saying, I think, you know, after the, just before the first ballot of MPs, I think there was a poll that came out that said Penny Morden would beat everyone. And I think, and Liz Truss was not popular with MPs, with members, sorry. And I think part, I'm not being a Penny supporter, I'm just saying there was, I think members were wanting, I hate to use this phrase, but a fresh start. Someone like Penny or Kemi, or someone who they haven't seen before, someone like that who they wanted to come up and win, basically. And I think the Tories have completely stitched up this election. I think if they had looked at the poll and thought, okay, our members want Penny, fine, but our MPs want Rishi, okay, fine, the MPs can have their choice. Let's give the members someone they want, which is where the Labour system actually works. And the fact that, you know, once you, you know, what there's none of this MPs voting, then, you know, you cut out to two, just everyone goes to the members. And it's a, you know, transferable vote thing. That works because it means the MPs get their choice, plus the members get to choose on whoever. And I just think Tories have completely stitched this up. I think it should have been Rishi versus Penny or Rishi versus Kemi. You know, Rishi was obviously going to make the final two, fine. But I just think, fine, Liz has won, but I don't think she's the right person, to be honest. I think it should have been someone like Kemi or Penny, is my honest. And I think the Tories would have been in a better position if they had done that. But, you know, that's politics for you. But, you know, that's my opinion.
I'm just going to say, to go back to the question of, like, if she would be able to unite the party, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe this is my personal opinion, but I think Truss was, or is, the least polarizing out of the candidates that were there. She didn't really slander any of the other candidates whilst she was encouraged to, especially with Penny Mordaunt, whatever, sorry, etc. Which you can edit that one. But I think if she's the person to do it or not, I have no clue. I'm not sure she is strong enough to do it, like, along the lines of what Matthew was saying, but it would be in their best interest as a party to try and remain united, because if there is a quicker general election, then they're not going to do as well as they hope, I think, if not.
I think the problem Conservatives have is the same problem that kind of we see with the Labour Party in terms of these leadership elections, which is that the members' perspective of what's good for the country seems to be getting further and further apart from what the general public's expectations of what should be good for the country is, which just means that members always seem to be voting in people that the general public don't necessarily agree with, which means any kind of person campaigning this has to kind of campaign for the party in one way and then immediately kind of turn in order to get main support amongst the general population. I mean, we saw in this leadership election that Rishi was, after these final two, the general public preferred Rishi. I mean, his approval numbers still weren't great, but they were better than Liz Truss, and he was kind of competing better against Keir Starmer and those type of polls. It was the thing that Rishi Sunak was like very keen on pointing out during the campaign. And it just kind of, for the general political system, I think it's kind of bad news that the memberships of both of our main parties seem to be getting further apart from the wants and ambitions of the general population. And like, what does that mean for the future? How does that mean we can ever get like a leader into a political party that is going to kind of be generally accepted by the population and thought of as like a good political leader, when like the attributes they're looking for are entirely different?
I think that's something that definitely has to be raised, and was actually going to be my little next point, because it's one thing to bring the membership together around the candidate. Boris Johnson certainly did that. He was voted for by over two-thirds of the membership that voted, and I think he had an outright majority of all Conservative members, even including the ones that didn't vote back in 2019. Interesting that we've had them every 3 years since 2016, and the next time it might happen is potentially 2025, so continuing that trend. But the other factor is trying to bring along both the membership and your parliamentary party. Now, Jeremy Corbyn couldn't do this. In 2016, he had that front bench. It was a political assassination attempt, if you want to believe Corbyn supporters. It was trying to save the Labour Party, if you want to believe those on the front bench. It doesn't really matter. It didn't do very well for the Labour Party in the long run. It didn't do very well for Jeremy Corbyn in the long run. They are both still out of power. The Conservative Party remain in power, which means that Liz Truss is going to have to rely on Conservative members of Parliament, a constituency amongst which she did not do well. Let's be blunt. There were, five rounds, of voting for getting it down to the final two. Liz Truss was never in that final two until it was the possibility of a Rishi Sunak versus Penny Mordaunt race. And to be brutally honest, I think that a lot of people saw those two candidates and thought, well, hang on, there's no one there that continues on a sort of Johnson feel. Liz Truss saw the market that was open, disenfranchised Boris Johnson supporters. You can see it by those who are backing her: Nadine Dorris, Therese Coffey, Anne-Marie Trevelyan, Jacob Rees-Mogg. Those people are a large constituency in the Conservative Party, especially in the parliamentary party, who stuck by Boris Johnson. And they turned on, the candidate who they felt was too unlike Boris Johnson to be worth supporting over Rishi Sunak. And that candidate was Penny Mordaunt, who was doing very, very well, was polling, as Matthew, you said a while ago, very well with members additionally, and was second place consistently up until that final round, really fell at the last hurdle. But now Liz Truss has to reconcile that divided political party. And one way she's definitely not going to do that is by blatantly and I think incredibly rudely snubbing Rishi Sunak as the announcement was made. Now, I know they had a little bit of bad blood over the course of this campaign, Rishi Sunak calling her policy decisions, unbudgeted and financially irresponsible. And Liz Truss, I think probably by the end of the campaign, had put Rishi Sunak in the list of financial doomsayers and lefty woke liberal naysayers. Although maybe that's going a little too far for hyperbolic effect. But when the result was announced and Liz Truss was confirmed as the next leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party, no handshake, no hug, didn't even look at him. And Rishi Sunak was seated. There was only one person in between the two candidates. Not even a turn to glance and a nod and a smile and a thank you. Now, she mentioned in the speech, I'm not quite sure what I think about that speech. It was very angry, very aggressive and quite, I think she was going for powerful, but missed the mark phenomenally. That speech had one line in it about Rishi Sunak, and it was, thank you for a well-fought campaign or something along those lines. Back in 2019, Boris Johnson, the first thing he did when he won, admittedly he knew he was going to win, there was no way in Hades that Jeremy Hunt could have overturned him. Some would say the same thing happened here, Liz Truss was far out in front. Boris Johnson turns around, shakes Jeremy Hunt by the hand, and then walks up. I just don't understand why Liz Truss seems intent on starting her premiership in a way that almost every political theorist says is the wrong way to go about leadership in politics, which is by surrounding yourself with yes people and blanking out all attempts of constructive criticism from anyone, essentially. That starts with blanking Rishi Sunak, who carried a lot of MP support. An outright majority, I think, was close to being achieved by Rishi Sunak of MPs. And now Liz Truss is turning around and, well, not turning around. Does this set her off on a bad footing with her own parliamentary party? And if so, does that see her in quite a similar position to Jeremy Corbyn back in 2015, where the membership votes for the candidate, but the parliamentary party are intensely sceptical?
I'm not sure it's quite as bad as Jeremy Corbyn had it when he got elected, primarily because, as you pointed out, she's a bit of a contingency from Boris Johnson. So there is a kind of like she's kind of a contingency rather than a complete break, which was what Jeremy Corbyn was. So I don't think it's as bad. And she also does have some like big political heavyweights in the party backing her, as opposed to Jeremy Corbyn, who was kind of like new and on the wing, he'd been around for ages, but didn't have any kind of like big Labour figures really backing him. Everyone he supported was very much in his wing of the party and kind of hadn't stepped out beyond that. But yeah, she's gonna have a really tricky time. There were some really bad things said during the leadership election from both candidates about the other one. And I can understand there being bad bloods, but you would have thought maybe a symbolic handshake. And we don't know how they reacted before they came into the hall and were told what the results were. Maybe there was a handshake then, but you'd have thought something would be good. Like just like a glance of acknowledgement, because Rishi Sunak was certainly doing the supportive clapping side of things for policies he'd said were economically illiterate or something, which was interesting. But she didn't really keep up her end of the bargain there. But I'm sure over the next coming days, she's going to try and do that kind of reaching out to the party, because she's going to have to.
So there's a couple of things I want to say. First thing is, before I say this, I have just watched the video of Boris Johnson winning in 2019. So I don't think there would have been a handshake. If you watch it closely, it's Jeremy Hunt that turns around to Boris Johnson and gives him the hand. So I don't know if there would have been a handshake, but Jeremy Hunt started the handshake, if you like. I thought that was the case, but I'll watch it back just in case I'm talking rubbish. But no, that is what happened. Yeah, they looked at each other, but I don't think there would have been a handshake if Jeremy Hunt hadn't turned around and volunteered his hand. You talk about Boris Johnson. No, you don't. Sorry. You talk about the difference from Boris Johnson versus Jeremy Corbyn and Liz Truss versus Keir Starmer. The difference is it's not Jeremy Corbyn. And I'm sorry, that man was the most, he was decided and was, he was not going to be elected Prime Minister. Even Labour people were not voting for Jeremy Corbyn, which again is why I think 2019 was a weird election, because you had the Brexit vote, you had the anti-Corbyn vote, and to be honest, you had the voting for, what people were voting for Boris, not the Tories. And I know I'm going back to 2019, but the reason I say that is because you don't have Jeremy Corbyn as her opposite number. At least in Keir Starmer, you've got someone who is potentially electable. And I think Corbyn was not electable, which obviously meant they were never going to put Corbyn number 10. I don't care what Labour people, you know, like your Diane Abbott and your left-wing Labour people, he was never going to get in, and that was decided very early on. But Keir Starmer, on the other hand, see when Keir Starmer's on form at PMQs, he's on form, and he's very good. You know, that's what I find about Starmer, he is, yes, he comes across a bit boring, but actually, see if he listened to what he's saying, he's actually very knowledgeable. I just don't think he lacks a bit of oomph, if you like, and I think Truss might bring that out of him, because Truss is quite forward. And it adds a lot, you know, personal experience. I was in the Commons at the start of August, and I have to say it's tiny, and it adds another level of intensity to these PMQ sessions, and I think they will be very interesting on Wednesday. Wednesday will be very interesting to see how she is, because she's quite good. She's quite, I'll say forceful, it's not quite what I mean, but she does have a bit of presence on about her. I think her versus Sam will actually be quite a good fight, especially after being in the Commons myself and seeing how small it is, it adds another level of intensity to it. But anyway, the main point I'm trying to make is you've not got an unelectable leader of the opposition anymore. You've got someone who's actually electable. So yeah.
Yeah, so it's very important to point that out. We had very unique circumstances in and around the 2019 general election. I think if that happens at any other time of the year or in the political cycle, as you say, Matthew, they're very different results would be probably forecast and maybe even expected. But because it happened then, and because it happened under that particular Brexit scenario and economic situations, all of the things that led up to it, we will never know. And that's probably for the best, because it would do political theorists' head in if we had to constantly rerun election models from years gone by to try and work out how old elections would have gone, and then try and work out how future elections go for polling and stats. I think it's an important point you've made there, Matthew. It's just deviated slightly from where we were focusing around Liz Truss's potential divide between the membership and the parliamentary party. But I think raising it is very important, because we aren't in a one-party system as much as some people might like us to be. And it sometimes feels like it with the sheer length of time that normally elapses between party changeovers. We've had 12 years of Conservative-led rule. We had 13 years of Labour before it. We had 18 years of the Conservatives before that, and so on and so on. But there is another party, another major party that is now much more confident than it has been for a while of being an electoral force, and that is the Labour Party. You can't underestimate the work that Keir Starmer has done in making the party slightly more presentable in one wing, but there have also been sacrifices made by Keir Starmer in relation to the left wing of his party, which could cause him some electoral grief in the future. There are, of course, other parties as well, the Liberal Democrats nationwide. You have the SNP and Plaid Cymru in Scotland and Wales, and the Green Party, who are one of the parties calling for much, much more to be done on energy bills. They want an actual reduction in energy bills. But that's part of their much broader overall strategy in terms of energy independence and sources, which you can definitely get from the Green Party manifesto. I wonder if you can guess what sort of energy sources they would like us to be using. Give you a clue, they're not fossil fuels. We are going to slightly turn now to what's been predicted. And now I know that one of our panelists does definitely want to talk about this, but I'm going to save his comments for the end as sort of a wrapping up of the cabinet appointments, or the prospective cabinet appointments, because listeners of Election Watch will remember back on, I think it was episode 4 or maybe episode 5 of the series, where I put out my list of who I think Liz Truss will put in the cabinet. And, well, it's wrong. It's just wrong. But I would like to say, in very much in the style of Eric Morecambe, that I seem to have almost all the right names, but not necessarily in the right order. Now, I'm just going to run down a list that has been tweeted and widely shared and is now believed to be, if not right on the nose, but very close to what Liz Truss is expected to appoint as cabinet posts. And we'll just go through some of the main ones and some of the surprises in this list, because there are some that you look at and think, how in the world have you got that job? And I'll let you find out which ones based on the incredulity in my voice. So as Chancellor, this one has basically been signed, sealed and delivered for ages. Kwasi Kwarteng is rumoured to be moving in to number 11. Foreign Secretary, long-term Conservative Party spokesman and the person who took up the role of the third Education Secretary in 36 hours, James Cleverly, is expected to take up that post. Suella Braverman, the former Attorney General, is expected to move to the Home Office, with Nadim Zahawi being moved to the Cabinet Office. No surprises as who's Defence Secretary. That's expected to stay as Ben Wallace. I think the biggest surprise would have been if he didn't stay as Defence Secretary, given just how popular he is with the membership. He is the most popular Conservative Member of Parliament and Member of the Cabinet right now. A couple of other big names who are on this list coming from Tim Shipman, by the way. Health, Therese Coffey. Now, she has been seen as, how do I put this, a controversial Secretary of State for Work and Pensions. Although that might be doing, well, the word controversial is certainly doing some heavy lifting in that sentence. But she's looking for a promotion on this one. Jacob Rees-Mogg at Business. Anne-Marie Trevelyan keeps her job at Trade, if this list is to be believed. One that came out of nowhere for me, Ian Duncan-Smith as Leader of the Commons. I did not see that coming. Along with Sajid Javid going to Northern Ireland. I was having a conversation as I was reading this list yesterday. And I was thinking, well, hang on, this is a bit like when the royal family would banish their most troublesome nobleman to become Lord Lieutenant, just so they could get them out of the way. A real graveyard of political ambition there. Robert Buckland back in the cabinet, or staying in the cabinet with Wales Secretary. Tom Tugendhat, either rumoured to be Securities Minister or the number two at the Foreign Office, which is looking more favourable by the day. One that has absolutely floored me is the prospect of Nadine Dorries staying at Culture. I don't quite understand how that has happened. It is potentially a thing, though, that Nadine Dorries will turn that down, because apparently she has been offered a lucrative book deal, this coming from Tim Shipman. It does mean potential by-election in her seat, though. But not to worry, because Boris Johnson might well be about to offer her a peerage. Kemi Badenoch, potentially Education Secretary, tipped by most, although Michelle Donnellan has been a key spokeswoman for Liz Truss over this campaign and was appointed Education Secretary for what, about 10 minutes back in that cabinet reshuffle phase of Boris Johnson's government. Two last ones. Penny Mordaunt, tipped by many to become party chair. Penny Mordaunt has apparently said, no thanks, don't want that. Apparently she's actually turned down two different prospective offers, and from what's left in the cabinet, transport is her only real possibility, but Grant Shapps hopes and expects to stay there. His only other alternative says he might go to chair. And then finally, Ian Duncan-Smith does not want anything other than a cabinet department. So this is a big, long list. There are some big moving parts, apparently. Education and transport tosses between Donnelland, Badenoch and Mordaunt. Northern Ireland is a rotating door between Sajid Javid, Ian Duncan-Smith and Robert Buckland. And leader of the House, well, Ian Duncan-Smith, Penny Mordaunt, Robert Buckland are the three names that come in to frame. This all, again, coming from Tim Shipman on Twitter, according to conversations with aides and ministers. But as he says, the whiteboard is not finalised. So I feel pretty bad about my prediction in terms of where they went, but I feel pretty good that I've got a couple of the main names. Vicky, Laura, what sort of stands out to you on that list? Because there are a lot of names that this could be an attempt at a dead cat strategy to sneak one appointment in whilst just slamming another 50 down on the desk beside them. What are your thoughts on this particular list of prospective ministers?
I mean, I think it's interesting. It's seemingly no one wants to have a party chair or leader of the House. Those can be seen as quite doomed positions. And I think it's slightly amusing that people are being offered them and turning them down. It kind of speaks to how MPs view the party's electoral chances coming up if they know those positions are just going to perhaps bring more trouble than promise for their future careers. I was surprised to see Nadine Dorris still on that list. I thought after some of the tweets that had been displayed during the leadership election, she might have annoyed lots of members of her party, and thus appointing her to a cabinet position wouldn't be a great way of reaching out to Rishi supporters, who I think had had enough of her by the end of the campaign. But it'd be interesting what happens there, whether she gets that peerage, whether she turns it down. It could have massive consequences to what happens with the TV industry moving forward and how high Channel 4 privatisation and BBC licence fee renewal is on the priority list. I think it's also interesting to be putting Suella at Home. That's a really big promotion, and I'm not entirely sure, like, she's untested in that area. It would be really interesting to see how that goes, because it's somewhat out of the blue. And then I think, again, like you pointed out, Sajid Javid being moved to Northern Ireland is kind of also stuck up to me, because it seemed like, oh, we need to offer someone from the last, like a major thing from the last government to roll in this government, but let's just give him Northern Ireland because that's not going to cause us any trouble. But again, I think it'd be interesting considering how different lots of the different leadership candidates' approaches were on Northern Ireland, as well as on the economy. It's hard to appoint people to those roles if they've spent the last couple of weeks attacking Liz Truss for her views on like those areas. So finding someone who can fit that role and will then like agree with Liz Truss and assume cabinet with collective responsibility for decisions made in that area may be difficult.
So now we're going to turn to someone who's been wanting to speak about the cabinet appointment since the very start of this podcast. Matthew, I know you have some thoughts on this. And I wonder, you, again, as we introduced you at the start of this podcast, you probably naturally lean conservative. At the moment, they're just not doing it for you in terms of securing your vote. Where do you see them in this new guise with this prospective cabinet? Is this going to make it more likely that you vote for them? Or is this actively pushing you away? And I don't know what you think of this cabinet. So sort of roll those two together if you want.
So cabinet's not really making my mind. It's not making the decision for me. I'll put that out there. To me, it depends what they come up with. I kind of judge elections on an election by election basis. Yes, I will primarily, or I have primarily, fell towards Tories, yes, but that doesn't mean the next election I can be a staunch Labour supporter. You know, it depends what the policies are. Having said that, I'm actually laughing at this list. Quasi Quark. I mean, come on. Sorry, Quasi. James Cleverly is just about as useless. Suella Braverman at home, okay. She doesn't like Pretty, so put in Suella. Okay, I can see where that, I can see the logic behind that. Some will disagree with it, but I can see the logic behind it. Nadeem Zahawi, I'm not a personal fan of him, but, you know, can't argue with his credentials. He did well at vaccines minister. And if he's popular, fine. I'm not a personal fan of him. That's just me. Therese Coffey, I mean, I love when Therese Coffey does interviews because they're a mess. And she just doesn't say anything, honestly. I mean, even a random idiot off the street could interview her and she'd still be stuck. I mean, she is the most useless of useless. Brandon Lewis at Justice is an interesting one. I don't know why you've got Robert Buckland as Welsh and Brandon Lewis as Justice. Put Robert Buckland back in Justice if it was me. Because Robert Buckland, I think, is actually a credible pair of hands. I can see why he's Welsh, because he is Welsh. He doesn't stand in Wales, he's got an English seat. I think that's the case. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but he didn't do a bad job at Justice when he was there. Business, Jacob Rees-Mogg. I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg speaks for himself, doesn't he? I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg is pointless now there's no Brexit. Jacob Rees-Mogg got his name because of Brexit, and I think she's just given him a job to give him a job, really. Anne-Marie Trevelyan, she's a safe pair of hands. Boris Johnson likes her. I've not got a problem with her. Simon Clark, I don't actually know who that is, to be perfectly honest with you. Chloe Smith, she's quite good at the dispatch box. Yeah, fine. Environment, I mean, who is that? Sorry. Culture, Nadine Dorries is an interesting one. Controversial, yes. Popular, yes, with members. And I think that's what she's trying to do. Nadine is one of these people that is controversial, but she toes the popular line, I'll call it. She's been very firm in the BBC. And I think she has a bugbear from their coverage of Brexit. Rightly or wrongly, people say the BBC was biased. I'm not getting into it.
I just want to ask you on that one. Do you think that could be said for a lot of the decisions that seem to be being made in this cabinet? It's not necessarily towing the party line, towing Liz Truss's line. It's towing the popular line, because you've got the people who are popular in the party and who've stuck around for long enough. People like James Cleverly, Nadeem Zahawi, Ben Wallace. Jacob Rees-Mogg has his own following, I guess, although some still refer to him as the honourable member for the 18th century. And then you have Nadine Dorries, who, yes, alienates large groups of people whenever she opens her mouth, but does also bring with her that it's sort of blind loyalty to the person who gives her job, and also can bring along a couple of members with her. Do you think this is more of a populist appeal cabinet, or is it a cabinet that's built to bring Liz Truss's views to bear in policy, Matt?
So I think it's a mixture of both of them, to be honest with you. Quasi-Quarting, well, it's very well known that those two are very good friends. Same with Denise Coffey. So that's handing jobs out to your friends. Fine. Nadine Dorries is a weird one. When she was given the culture secretary, I remember, who was it? Adam Bolton comes to me. It might be Adam Bolton. I was watching Sky, so either Adam Bolton or Beth Digby, one of the two of them, said the most surprising appointment of that reshuffle in February last year, I think, in September last year, was Nadine Dorries to culture. And I think Boris did it because he wanted to put his foot down on a lot of things, like the BBC and other things. And I thought, he's obviously gone. She is good at this because she's been outspoken about it. But just to go down the rest, I'm pleased Tom Tugendhat's got a place. Quite like him. Alistair Jack, is fine. He's been a bit quiet, to be honest. Sajid Javid, well, he's a safe bet of hands anywhere he goes, to be honest. He's quite good. You know, you could put him in, you could put him in the most pointless job on the planet and he'd still make it a decent job. Chief Whip, Wendy Mordaunt, I think that makes a statement, actually, given what brought Boris Johnson down. I'm not going to go into it, but obviously, given what brought Boris Johnson down, that's actually a really good appointment, I have to say. But yeah, I just think it's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit, it's better than the current one, and that's not hard to be, but it's still pretty bad. I think it comes back to the talent in the Tory party just now, I really do. The talent in the Tory party just now is absolutely terrible. There's a lot of them. Having said that, I'm pleased Ben Wallace is staying at defence because he's been phenomenal with Ukraine and everything. He's been phenomenal. He's very good. But I don't know, it just seems a bit, I'm judging off a bit of paper just now. Maybe when they're actually in their posts, I might be proved differently, but it doesn't appeal big time to me. That's my opinion of it.
No, it's always good to hear the opinions, because everyone here is going to be a voter in the next election, and this is the government that is going to have to, well, as long as there isn't a change in leadership before the next election, which, again, I'm not going to predict anything more about the Conservative leadership until their three-year schedule runs out in 2025. But as long as Liz Truss keeps on course, she will lead the Conservative Party into the next general election. Now, I've just got a pop-up here from Ione Wells, one of the BBC's political correspondents, that is appearing a general election is unlikely. So this government has a chance to have a two-year run-in to the next general election, which, I mean, we know what happened to the last government who had a two-year run-in, or a little bit over 2 years, to the next general election after a change from a popular populist to someone at the top table. I am, of course, talking very much around the subject of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. And interestingly enough, almost the exact same amount of time will have passed since the Conservative Party first got into power with David Cameron in the coalition to when the next general election is slated to be in mid to late 2024. It's only 1 year longer than the new Labour experiment, Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. That experiment ended. Is the Conservative Party going to lose the next general election? Matthew, you already have said your piece on that one. You think that whenever it's called, the Conservative Party are doomed. I think that wouldn't be too much of a generalisation. It is interesting, though, to see what is now coming out from the Conservative Party. There are a lot of changes to the policies that have brought them this far. Obviously, we had the big change initially, which was dropping austerity in maybe even in name only under Theresa May. We then have the highest tax level since 1947. We're now having cuts in taxes. We've seen pro-Europeanism, anti-Europeanism. We've seen lots of different chameleonic changes, you could say, from the Conservative Party of David Cameron all the way through to the Conservative Party now, of Liz Truss. So I think we'll be drawing this episode to somewhat of a close, but I do want to ask, what do you guys think this government has in store for the next couple of years? Whoever gets put in the cabinet, a Liz Truss government. We've already talked about what we think she'll do on the cost of living, things like that. What's the big picture prediction you guys are going to be making for however long Liz Truss stays in number 10? Should we start? Let's throw you in the deep end, Vicky. Let's start with you for a prediction. I can see that smile. Don't worry.
Prediction, she bumbles along, kind of with the same level of support, questions over her authority over the party, but with Labour still ahead in the polls until we reach an election, which I think is probably going to happen in 2024. I don't see it happening earlier. She mentioned the 2024 election in her speech. I think that's definitely her plan, where she loses the election to either a coalition or Labour majority. But I think it's actually probably going to have, what is a two-year premiership, and then lose her leadership after that. That'll be my prediction.
Wow, putting on a prediction for the shortest term prime minister since Bonar Law. That's a record no one hopes to beat when they walk in through that door of number 10 for the first time as premier, which Liz Truss will do tomorrow. Laura, I wonder, I know there have been a couple of connection issues with your feed on this call, but have you got any sort of big picture predictions you're willing to stick your neck out and make for Liz Truss's time in number 10?
Do you know what? I don't think it's going to be very surprising. I agree with Vicky. I think she'll last until 2024. I'm going to go against the bookies, but we'll see. And yeah, I think she's not going to have a second term. That's her done. Either because she doesn't fulfil half the promises that she made trying to cover every single category, or because she does so many that it completely just doesn't work and alienates a lot of the population.
And then to stare into the crystal ball, to look at the tea leaves at the bottom of the what Joe Lycett called the dregs of the Conservative Party at the end of 12 years in power. Matthew, what do you see coming in the immediate future for Liz Truss and the government?
More slagging by Joe Lycett, which I have to say, just as a side note, Joe Lycett summed up the feelings of the nation yesterday, taking the mick out of him. Brilliant. I know he was criticised for it, but brilliant. But on a more serious note, I think, like the girls have said, she will lose the election. When it is, I don't know. I would rather it was 24, but I have a feeling she might be pressured into it by 25, by earlier, sorry. But there's no, yeah, I think I'd rather it was 24, but I think she might be pressured into next year. But regardless, she's going to lose and she will be the shortest prime minister ever.
Well, 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 we have some very optimistic people about Liz Truss's premiership on this particular panel. But I do have to say, Liz Truss faces a very tough task to win the next general election, whenever that may be. Whether or not she can escape from it without losing it is a different matter, because the Labour Party, as I mentioned at the top of the programme, they've had quite a one-dimensional attack line against the government so far, which is that we are not Boris Johnson, very much in the style of Joe Biden's presidential campaign back in 2020, where he was, I am not Donald Trump, I will do things differently. Well, guess what? The Labour Party are not going to be running against Boris Johnson. Or are they? Because, and this is just me being nice and cynical and having a good look at some of the rumours that are floating. Reports came in to the Eye, I believe it was, that around 12 Boris Johnson supporting members of the Conservative Party are thinking of submitting their letters of no confidence as early as this evening in Liz Truss. Now, first off, oh my lord, what in the world is going on with the Conservative Party that they need to even think about having this discussion? It's just been the way things go in modern politics that once a leader is removed from office, that leader does not reassume leadership roles. Yes, it's happened in the past. You've seen the great titans of party leadership go through periods where they were not leaders of their party and then come back. But more often you'd see it prime minister to leader of the opposition to prime minister again, and then probably to leader of the opposition again before resignation. That happened to Clement Attlee a couple of times, and we saw it with Harold Wilson, Ted Heath. But nowadays that just does not wash. If you're kicked out by your own party and the first topic of conversation amongst members is, are you coming back? Well, that puts the party in a bit of a bind. Now, I don't think I'll open this one up to the panel just because I want to save that for if it ever gets close. If it ever gets close, then we'll have a long old discussion about the possibilities of Boris Johnson returning to the leadership of the Conservative Party and possibly even to the leadership of the country. But that is very much a story for another day, because today is all about Liz Truss. The focus, the spotlight, the attention is on her in her £4.50 Claire's Accessories earrings rather than Rishi Sunak's Prada suit. She has won the Conservative leadership election and now faces the biggest challenge of her political life. She's been in government in a ministerial position since 2012, and after 10 years of a hard slog, she is probably one of the most ministerially experienced prime ministers in history. The only people who can sort of come close to her are probably Gordon Brown for his 8 years in the Treasury. His 10 years in the Treasury. What am I saying? John Major for his time in the Treasury and in the Foreign Office. And then you're looking at Jim Callaghan for his work in all of the big four positions in government, Home Secretary, Chancellor and Foreign Secretary. But does this mean she's going to make an effective prime minister? Well, that all depends. Can she unite her party? Can she unite her membership? Can she unite her MPs? We don't know. Part of it will be announced tomorrow when Liz Truss has her first podium moment outside number 10 in the afternoon after flying to Balmoral to receive and, I'm assuming, accept the invitation of Her Majesty the Queen to form a government in her name. But wouldn't it be a shock if she turned it down? Liz Truss will then appoint the cabinet, build her new government before she faces Keir Starmer in her first Prime Minister's Questions at midday on Wednesday. So, as Liz Truss prepares to become the 15th British Prime Minister to be appointed by Her Majesty the Queen, we look forward. Maybe looking forward is the wrong word, but look ahead to Liz Truss's premiership. There's a lot she has to do. There's potentially not much time she has to do it in. So now you've heard our take on what's potentially going to happen. It is up to the political gods as to what does. And that just about wraps up what I think we're going to say today about Liz Truss. Thank you very much to Vicky, to Laura and to Matthew for appearing on today's episode. I'm sure we will hear from them all again at some point in the future. And you never know, there might be something coming along from Matthew on our website, which is politicsunboxedpodcast.wordpress.com. So do keep an eye out for that. Try go on there. See if you can subscribe to our mailing list. I promise you won't be disappointed. You won't miss out on anything that comes forward. We are going to have a lot more articles coming up on there and a couple of different perspectives on the Conservative Party leadership. One from a Rishi Sunak supporter, the other from a Labour Party member, just to see the views from those outside the tent looking in and inside the tent very much looking out. But Apart from that, thank you very much to everyone for listening to this episode of Election Watch. We will be back again very soon. Please do follow the various accounts we have on social media at politics.unboxed and Expression FM News. And Expression FM, don't forget to follow our main page to see all the things that we will be bringing to you over the course of the year. You can get in touch on Twitter or Facebook as well, just by searching either Politics Unboxed or Expression FM. If you want to get in touch via email, then you can as well, politics.unboxed@outlook.com or station manager@expression.fm. Thank you very much to everyone for listening. We will see you again for the next episode. And until then, this has been Election Watch. Goodbye. Election Watch.